Chapter 46.
"And soon now you will enjoy my musical talent," the boat captain said in solid but heavily accented English. He throttled the engine back and the boat began to slow. "To your right you see Echo Wand. In English it is Echo Wall."
Along with the boat's other 20 passengers, Sam and Remy turned in their seats and looked starboard. They were aboard one of the 18 covered electric passenger boats operated by the Koenigsee Boat Company. There were two types, a 60-footer, which held 85 passengers, and Sam and Remy's model, an 18-footer that held 25. A quarter mile away through the early morning mist, they could see a heavily forested cliff rising from the water. The captain lifted a polished flugelhorn from beneath the helm console, put it to his lips, and blew a few mournful notes, then went silent. 2 seconds of silence passed, and then the sound bounced back in perfect pitch. The passengers laughed and clapped.
"Please, if you would, my trumpeting is not included in your fare this morning, and it is thirsty work. As you disembark, you may, if you wish, put Trinkgeld into my cup here or where you see them on the bulkheads. I will divide proceeds between myself and my colleague in the mountains who answered my call."
More laughter. One passenger asked, "What is Trinkgeld?"
"Drinks money, of course. Thirsty work, the flugelhorn. Okay, now we go on. Next stop, St. Bartholomew's Pilgrim Church."
The ride resumed in near silence, the boat's electric motors making a soft, gurgling hum. They glided along, seemingly suspended in the mist, water hissing along the sides. The air was perfectly calm, but chilled enough that Sam and Remy could see their breath. They'd gotten up early, at 6, and had a light breakfast in their room before resuming work. Before going to bed, Remy had emailed a handful of former colleagues and acquaintances with 3 questions. At the time of Xerxes' invasion, what treasures did Delphi hold? What was the current disposition of those treasures? Were there any accounts of Xerxes making off with Delphic or Athenian treasure? Waiting in her inbox were a half dozen answers, most of which simply opened doors to further questions and more what-ifs. "Still nothing from Evelyn, though," Remy said now, thumbing through her iPhone's email. Sam said, "Remind me. Evelyn Torres, at Berkeley. She was the assistant curator at the Delphi Archaeological Museum until about 6 months ago. Nobody knows Delphi better than she does."
"Right. She'll get back to us, I'm sure."
Sam snapped a few pictures of the scenery, then turned back around to find Remy staring at her iPhone. Her brow was furrowed.
"What's wrong?" he asked.
"I was worrying about Kolkoff showing up again, and had a thought. How many times has he popped up so far?"
Sam thought for a moment. "Not counting the Pocomoke. There was Rum Key, Chateau d'If, and Elba. 3 times.
Not in the Ukraine, not in Monaco, and not here, right?"
"Knock wood."
"Don't count on it."
"What's that mean?"
"I can't be sure, but if memory serves, there are 3 things Ukraine, Monaco, and here have in common."
"Go on."
"I never used my iPhone in any of those places. We had the Iridium. I never even powered it up, and only did that here last night."
"No, that's not right.
I checked email when we landed in Salzburg."
"You're sure?"
"Pretty sure." "Could they have bugged it?"
"Technically, it's doable. But when could they have done it? It's never been out of your sight, has it?"
"Once. I left it at the B&B when we went to raise the Moch."
"Damn."
"The other times. Rum Key, Chateau d'If, and Elba. Did you just power it up, or did you connect to the Internet?"
The iPhone could connect to the Internet in 2 ways, either through its built-in edge network or via local wireless networks.
"Both."
"Kolkoff could have installed a transponder. Every time you powered up or connected to the Internet, the transponder tapped the iPhone's GPS and sent a ping back to Kolkoff saying, 'Here.'
Remy exhaled heavily, her mouth set. Do you think they're...
She started to turn around, but Sam stopped her. We'll look when we're getting off. When was the last time you powered up? The hotel?
Right.
I didn't notice anyone following us this morning.
Me neither. But with these crowds, it's hard to be sure.
Unfortunately, Schonau's not that big. With a half dozen men, they could have simply spotted us from a distance and watched us board the boat.
What do we do?
First things first. We drag the riddles and the research to the burn folder, he replied, already doing so on his own. Can't risk Kolkoff getting his hands on it. As he had with most of their personal and household gadgets, Sam had tweaked their iPhones, adding a number of applications, including a quick erase folder. Trying to open the folder without a password would instantly delete its contents. Once Remy had her data moved, Sam said, "Now, we hope for a miracle."
Which is?
That you're wrong about this. Problem is, that doesn't happen very often. Let me see your phone. She gave it to him. He got out his Swiss Army knife and went to work. Sam, his head bent over the dissected iPhone in his lap, finally muttered, "There you are." Remy leaned down.
"Something?"
Using his knife's tweezers, he lifted a pinky nail-sized circuit chip from the iPhone's innards. A pair of monofilament-like leads trailed down to the phone's battery.
"The culprit," he said.
The good news was the bug was set to transmit only when the phone was on. No signal ping would alert Kolkoff that they'd found the device. Sam detached the leads and dropped the chip into his shirt pocket and started reassembling the iPhone. 20 minutes later, with most of the mist dissipating under a sun-filled blue sky, they rounded the Hirschau Peninsula. St. Bartholomew came into view, its bright red onion domes glowing in the sun and the snow-veined granite of the mountains rising behind them. The meadow in which St. Bartholomew sat was on a 40-acre wedge of shoreline extending back to the forest. There were two dock areas, one for visitor arrivals and departures, the other, situated nearer the chapel, a covered boathouse. Strung out behind the chapel on islands of green lawn and meandering paths were a dozen wooden outbuildings, all rough-hewn and ranging from barn to cabin-sized. The captain circled the dock area once, waiting for another electric boat to disgorge its passengers, then headed in and glided alongside the pier. A crewman jumped across the gap, tied off the stern and bow lines, then swung up the boat's protective railing. Scanning their fellow passengers for familiar faces, Sam and Remy disembarked, pausing to drop some Trinkgeld into the bulkhead cup.
"Didn't see anyone,"
Sam muttered as he stepped onto the dock, then offered his hand to Remy. "You?"
"No."
Theirs was the second boat of the morning to put ashore. The majority of the first group was still lingering in the landing area and around the gift shop, snapping photos and studying maps. Sam and Remy moved along the split-rail fence that encircled the landing, scanning faces before the crowd had a chance to disperse. As they walked, they could hear several tour guides starting their introductory speeches over the background babble.
"Originally built in the 12th century, St. Bartholomew was once considered the protector of alpine farmers and of milkmaids. Find the interior floor plan is based on the Salzburg Cathedral, and the exterior stucco work was done by famed Salzburg artist Josef Schmidt. Until 1803, the hunting lodge adjacent to the chapel was the private retreat of the Prince Provosts of Berchtesgaden, the last of whom... After Berchtesgaden became part of Bavaria, the lodge became a favorite Wittelsbach hunting cabin."
Sam and Remy completed their circuit of the landing and ended up back at the dock. They'd seen no familiar faces. A half mile up the fjord, two more electric boats were coming around the peninsula. Sam said, "We can wait here and check faces as each boat comes in, or mix with the crowds and start hunting for clues."
"I'm not a big fan of waiting," Remy said.
"Me neither. Let's get moving." They made their way into the gift shop, where they selected a pair of sweatshirts, one a pale yellow, the other a dark blue, from the rack, then a pair of floppy hats from another display.
They paid for their purchases and headed to the restrooms to don their new clothing. If Kolkoff and his men had been observing them from the Schonau docks, these rudimentary disguises, combined with the crowds, which had by now swelled to over 200, might provide Sam and Remy enough cover to move about anonymously.
"Ready?" he asked.
"As I'll ever be," Remy replied, tucking her auburn hair under her hat. For the next 20 minutes they loitered around the landing area, taking pictures of the fjord and the mountains until Remy said,
"Got him."
"Where?" Sam replied without turning. "The boat that's circling, waiting to dock. Starboard side, fourth window back." Sam turned and pointed his camera across the fjord and caught the incoming boat in the corner of the frame. He zoomed in, took a few pictures, lowered his camera.
"Yep, that's Kolkoff. I counted three others. Wait here."
Hat pulled low over his eyes, Sam strolled back toward the dock.
"Hey there, just a minute," he called to the deckhand who was getting ready to untie the docked boat.
"Forgot the Trinkgeld."
Sam held up a 10-euro note.
"Certainly, sir. Go ahead," the deckhand said.
Sam hopped aboard, dropped the note and transponder chip into the Trinkgeld cup, then stepped back onto the dock. While in the bathroom, he'd used the price stickers from their sweatshirts to affix a spare watch battery to the chip. The battery wouldn't power the transponder for more than 30 minutes, he suspected, but it would be long enough for their purposes. He made his way back to Remy, who asked,
"Think it'll work?"
"It'll work. They won't have a choice but to follow it. The question is, how will Kolkoff handle it?"
Following the throng, half of whom were taking a guided tour, the other half on their own exploration, Sam and Remy made their way down the broad, white-graveled path toward the chapel. Back at the dock, Kolkoff and his three companions were disembarking.
"You think they're armed?"
Remy asked.
"I'd put money on it."
"We could find someone. See if there are any security guards."
"I don't want to put anyone in Kolkoff's way. Who knows what he'd do? Besides, right now we're still a step ahead. No use in squandering that. Let's keep going, finish the job, find what we've come for, and go."
"Okay. So, the riddle."
"The first half we've solved," Remy said. "That leaves us with two lines. The genius of Ionia, his stride a battle of rivals, and a trio of coins, their fourth lost, shall point the way to Frigisinga."
"Something about that first line keeps nagging me."
"Such as?"
"Something from history. A connection I'm overlooking."
From behind them they heard a voice.
"Pardon me, please. Excuse me?"
They turned and saw a woman on crutches trying to get past them. They stepped aside, and the woman smiled her thanks as she passed. Remy's eyes narrowed as she watched her move off.
"I know that look," Sam said.
"Light bulb pop on."
Remy nodded, her eyes still fixed on the woman.
"Her crutches.
The one on her right is set a notch lower."
"So?"
"Put it another way. Her stride isn't a battle of rivals," she replied, her face lighting up.
"That's it. Come on."
She hurried down the path to where it widened before the chapel and stopped at the fence, making sure they were away from prying ears. She hurriedly began tapping on her iPhone screen.
"There. Got it. You've heard of the Ionian League, ancient Greece, a confederation of states formed after the Meliac War?"
"Yes."
"One of the members of the Ionian League was the island of Samos, the birthplace of the genius of Samos, also known as Pythagoras. You know, the father of the triangle."
"I'm still not following."
"The woman's crutches. One was shorter than the other. If you stretch your imagination, they formed a scalene triangle, two unequal sides."
Now Sam caught on. He smiled. "Pythagoras was the father of the isosceles triangle. Two equal sides."
"His stride, a battle of rivals," Remy quoted again.
So we're looking for an isosceles triangle.
Right.
Probably marked by Laurent's cicada stamp. That leaves us with one line. A trio of coins, their fourth lost, shall point the way to Frigisinga.
Sam looked over his shoulder and scanned the crowds until he spotted Kolkoff, who was strolling around the landing area. His cohorts wouldn't be far away. Sam was about to turn away when he saw Kolkoff pull a BlackBerry from his pocket and study the screen. He jerked his head up, looked around, then gestured to someone in the crowd. 10 seconds later, his three companions were huddled around him. After a brief conversation, two of them turned and started jogging back to the dock. Kolkoff and the other man headed for the chapel path.
"Took the bait," Remy said. "But only partially. That's what I was afraid of. The question is, when will he realize the obvious?"
"Which is?"
"That he's got us trapped. All they have to do is stake out the dock and wait for us to come back."